AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet, Chevy runs deep.
This is AutoLine After Hours with Peter DiLorenzo, episode 139 for Friday, March 2nd, 2012. The Replacements.
Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey there, kids. It's another scintillating episode of AutoLine After Hours. My partner, John, is driving, I think, some Korean cars somewhere.
That's what I understand.
He couldn't be with us. And so I'm joined this evening by Mr. Scott Burgess, who is now... Tell the folks where you are.
I'm the senior editor at AOL Autos, and I'll be working on AOL Autos and Autoblog.
But you'll still be doing some occasional reviews for the
News? And I'm still writing the Thursday review for the Detroit News for the time being.
And the one and only, the man who knew too much, Jim Hall. Welcome.
Thank you, Peter.
2953 Analytics.
Yes.
In the Birmingham Quadrant.
Yes, but not the Triangle District.
Not the Triangle.
Not the Triangle District.
So, hey, hey, we're the monkeys, except for Davy Jones, who, let's just talk about Davy for a minute. He makes Justin Bieber look like a fourth-rate, you know.
Yeah.
At the time.
Just a piker.
Yeah, at the time, Davy Jones was so much bigger than even Justin could ascribe to at this point. Okay, enough.
And he was part of a quartet at that.
Yes, but he was a good guy. So, Davy, thanks for the memories.
What was his best song?
Daydream Believer.
Yeah.
Was Daydream Believer written by... Neil Diamond?
Somebody
big wrote
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah, it was written by a name.
Okay. But before we get started in the show, we really need to thank our office furniture gurus, and that is special thanks to Office Furniture Solutions, who is providing the new AutoLine After Hours set, which we love. We really want to thank our buddy Nate Anderson for getting this all arranged. Nate, you did a sweet job here. If you like what you see here, by the way, be sure to browse over to their website at ofsonline.com, ofsonline.com, or just pick up the phone and Nate will answer. He's a real guy. His number is 248-668-0077. Once again, big shout out to the folks at Office Furniture Solutions. Oh, and one more housekeeping announcement, and gentlemen, this is big. Starting on March 15th, the week of Daylight Savings Time, when everyone else springs ahead, oh no, we're not. We'll be moving back an hour to 6 p.m. Our new broadcast time starting on March 15th and going forward will be 6 p.m. Eastern Time, so take note. Once again, if you want to catch the show live, make sure to tune in at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on March 15th.
That's 3 Pacific and 2300 Zulu.
Yes. And now, on with the show. Okay, the first ball in the air is, how about the GM Peugeot Citroen deal, Jim?
It's an interesting deal. It's one of those things you could see why this happened if you pay attention to the European market. Peugeot has a middle-class sedan, the 508, and there's a Citroen C5. They couldn't put together a business case to do a next generation of these cars. We couldn't do it. It was the thinnest tracing paper. And their cars, in the case of the 508, that should sell well in China, they still couldn't put the case together. Here, watch, they'll turn into the next generation Lambdas. And in exchange, GM will get some other diesels. Because let's face it, Peugeot are probably the second best guys in the market or in the world right now doing diesels.
Okay, yeah, but now this is also the Peugeot families involved.
Correct.
And... if I'm not mistaken, what is the biggest issue in Europe right now besides the sales suck? Overcapacity.
Overcapacity, and nobody can build cars and make any kind of money on them. So they're hoping to address that part of it through piece cost. because their purchasing power is going to be pretty significant. If you look at jointly, you know, because the truth is they can buy power window switches from the same guy, but they come here with a bigger stick. There's going to come a time probably by 2016 or 2017 where you will be able to almost dictate pricing within a window. If you have enough stuff, you say, look, guys, globally, we need these parts, and here's how much we're going to pay.
Yeah, but my only concern is, okay, so Carlos Ghosn did a pretty representative job with Nissan Renault, but melding these cultures, one of which is culturally bankrupt and the other is culturally non-existent. I mean, it would behoove them to accelerate and make it all work in the shortest amount of time possible to make it work. And I'm totally skeptical about that. I don't see it happening.
I think they can make it work in a couple of reasons. One, remember, some of the Peugeot partners are slowly imploding. You know, they have four crossover type vehicles. Two of them come from Mitsubishi. Would you want your crossover vehicles coming from Mitsubishi if you had a choice?
No.
Yeah. I mean,
says emphatically.
But that's an issue because crossovers, passenger car derived crossovers, are a growing segment in Europe. People like them, you know, and ironically, even the French like them. You know, after Jean Drapeau or whoever was the mayor of France at the time said, or mayor of Paris said, we don't want those cars in our city. We don't want them. I don't want them in my city. So I can understand this. And if they can make the purchasing work, the joint purchasing, they'll get piece cost advantages. Well, it doesn't address their capacity things, but they said that in the start. They were both saying, this does not affect our restructuring issues.
Okay, well, I can understand all of it. It just seems, you know, it's one of those things where every possible domino has to fall in place.
I'm skeptical, too. I can see how it could work. Implementing it is going to be the devil's in the detail on this one, big time.
So, Scott, what do you think about an adjunct subject matter? Is Sergio has piped up and said, oh, well, if somebody's playing with PSA, Peugeot, Citroen, I want you, too.
It's not a move that really makes any sense, other than just to stir the pot a little bit more. And Sergio likes to do that, too.
He definitely likes to do that.
Well, PSA has deals going with Ford. They have deals going with BMW. So they have no problem of playing with multiple partners here. I mean, they're French. They're very liberal.
Yeah, I get it. The only upsetting
it's an open thing, corporation, I understand.
The only upsetting thing in all of this is they pulled the plug on their racing team unceremoniously, you know, 5 months before Le Mans with no warning.
Yeah.
That was a bummer. I mean,
although, you know, if you like Audi at Le Mans, it's a good decision.
So how about Fisker, Henrik Fisker? He will rule the world. He can't run a car company, so he brings in Tommy Lasorda to deal with all that nasty stuff so he can just be a brilliant designer. I got to tell you, you know, the Fisker, a 5,500-pound, does it look cool? Yeah, but it's a 5,500-pound slug. It's basically the Volt technology wrapped in a really nice wrapper, except the Volt's a real car and it works. What do you think?
I haven't driven it. I know a lot of people have just got a chance to drive it. I think that where's the market for that car? No one else is showing a market for those vehicles.
They were saying $15,000 a year.
Oh yeah,
$15,000 a year.
I'll tell you, once the green intelligentsia in Hollywood and Malibu buy one, okay, then what?
The pipe is about this wide. I mean,
it does look cool, no doubt about it. It's interesting. I've driven the car, and do you remember a concept car that Chrysler did called the 300 that was a big four-door sedan based off of a Viper?
It's in their basement.
It is in their basement. They let the media drive it, but when they drove it, they told the journalists, now don't go over about 50, right? That's what the Fisker kind of drives like. It's like it hasn't had development. It has these really cool capacitive door handles to open the door. You know, you just touch them. You don't have to press anything or pull anything. And driving around a little handling loop, went around and I put my hand down at about 70, and I touched it with the corner of my palm, and the door opened. Now, this is the kind of thing that vehicle development would find. You'd say, okay, we'll do an interlock on it. When the car's moving and it's in drive, we won't have the door open. Didn't do it. The car is full of stuff like that. And you can kind of understand why it happened. They buy the car completed, built by Valmet in Uusikaupunki, Finland.
Which used to build Boxsters.
Built Boxsters, built Caymans, built Saab convertibles. They built a lot of stuff there, and the guys do a great job building stuff. And Fisker got a hell of a deal from them because the Saab business went away and went down to Magna in Graz. And then the Porsche business, when Porsche volume started dropping, they decided to bring it back in-house. And so these guys were stuck with nothing to build, and they did a deal where they cut a deal with Henrik for piece cost. Now, I'm sure Henrik's guys told him, we're going to do $15,000 a year.
Which was just absurd. I mean, just absurd. It's $115,000. It's not developed.
So you sell $15,000, you're going to make a lot of money.
I don't even know how much money they would make if they sold $15,000.
Well,
know
see, remember, it's a trick question because their investment on the car is relatively low. The investment on the car was covered by Valmet and is put in the piece cost when they buy the completed car. Now, Lasorda is an interesting thing because they have to build a car.
Yeah,
because their second-generation car has to be built at the Wilmington plant, which is an interesting thing. Just
the Joe Biden special.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, Lasorda's background is manufacturing.
Thing
is, they had no manufacturing expertise in the company before.
I'm not denigrating Tom Lasorda.
No, I understand.
He's tremendous.
But I understand why they picked him.
I get it.
The question is, how did they get him?
Well, he's not doing anything.
He's
bored.
Yeah, okay.
He's bored.
Yeah. If you look at car companies, and I'll say new car companies, when a car company starts, the hardest thing for them to do is the second car. It's not the first car. It's the second car. Because while you're building the first car, you have to raise capital to do the plant improvements. You have to make sure that you are covering warranty administration and distribution fees. Your costs go nuts when you have the revenue from only a single car.
I get all that, Jim, but they didn't master the first car.
I know that.
And now they're going to the second car because they've got the government, a.k.a. you, us, the taxpayers' money, hanging over the deal. And they've got to make it sing. Otherwise, old Joe's not going to be happy, and they're going to look bad. They already look bad. Look, Henrik, I think, is a gifted designer. He's done some fabulous stuff.
Jim, he knows how to push a pencil.
Tell the audience what Henrik has done. They don't call him the man who knew too much for nothing. I know he will
BMW Z8, which is one of my favorite cars of all time.
One of my favorite cars, the
DB9.
The German Corvette.
Yep.
I loved it.
The DB9.
Awesome.
The Vantage.
Awesome.
The DBS.
Awesome.
The Rapide.
Yeah, okay.
Nice.
Okay, my point is, Henrik's a gifted designer.
He's a very gifted designer, no doubt about it.
Sometimes designers should be content with being designers, but Henrik is not. Henrik wants the world to be able to share in his vision. Hey, throughout automotive history, that's when things go off the rails. So, good luck to them. I'm not going to spend that kind of money on that car.
What's the price tag on that? Is that 80?
115.
When you get out the door, yeah. And they did a launch edition. I don't know how many they've delivered yet, because there's an aspect of the car where I think, in a way, every one of them has a degree of prototype to it. They're being built in a series manufacturing process, but
yeah. So you buy one when after just about to fold,
yeah.
You might get a decent Fisker,
possibly,
and it might be worth something 30 years down the road at Pebble Beach. No, I don't think so.
But Tesla has shown that you can lose money every year and still have your stock go up.
To a point. You know, their stock is not trading at what you'd expect for being a wunderkind company.
Right.
So, Scott, let's change the subject. We'll leave Henrik alone.
Yeah.
He's a good designer. I wish he hadn't gone down that road. Scott, I noted you drove the new Hyundai Genesis Coupe. What'd you think of that?
I really like it. I really like it. I like the look of it. I like
the dramatic improvement over the
previous. It's a refresh. It's not a but they added a lot of power to it. Hyundai is doing some really nice things with its engines.
What, you know, got 285 or something?
285 and you know, the Azera as well, it was one where the engine is just like, wow, you just added 70 horsepower to that thing.
Does it feel light on its feet?
The turbo does.
Turbo.
The turbo, we drove both of them on a racetrack, the V6 version, and that feels a little more planted, a little heavier, because it is.
It's a bit of a lead-tipped aero.
Yeah, but the turbo is actually, you can really flog it around, and it's a lot more fun, I think, to drive.
Was that a stick?
Yeah, the ones that we drove.
Is that a good gearbox?
Yes.
They've got everything dialed in pretty well, but they still need to do a lot of work on chassis. They're not there yet.
It's very bumpy. It just slide around some. You know, one of the things that they've done is I think all their transmissions are in-house as well. And for the last couple of years.
No. They use ZFs in the export Genesis sedans because they brand it. They make a big point about it being a ZF transmission.
But the engine improvements I think are notable, cosmetically on the exterior I think it's just a couple of hood vents and a couple of little changes.
A whole new front fascia because it's got now the Hyundai design language H sort of grill.
Yeah,
which some people like, some people don't. I like it because at least they're trying to. That's a vehicle that probably shouldn't have been called Genesis.
Yeah, what's the price point? 32.
A little bit less. No, less than 25.
No, it's more than that.
You're on the Genesis coupe,
I think for the base car, it's like it's mid to high 26s. I think. It's under 30 for a 4-cylinder base car.
Oh, okay.
And then they have that. Is it Spec R or something?
They have a track version. Yep. It's got some Brembos on it. And the brakes on that thing are incredible. I mean, that's one thing that's nice. The things I like is the rear-wheel drive sport coupe. I mean, it's a 2+2, but it's just your computer bag for the back seat. I mean, they have back seats back there.
Well, rear-wheel drive is getting to be a revelation.
you can make a car with the wheels in the back that make it go?
Yeah.
And dynamically, those are always just more fun to drive. Overall, I think the car is a pretty nice car. I don't think they have real high volume expectations for it yet, though.
Well, that's good.
It's a narrow-cast vehicle. It's a coupe. It's very sporty. And you just don't sell a lot of those. Volume cars are sedans and five-door hatchbacks that we call crossovers.
Cool. Okay, before we change subjects, Ben, why don't we hear a message from our partners at Bridgestone? Okay, we're back. And while Scott and Jim partake in some absolutely wonderful-looking Whoppers, I can't because of a little procedure I had this morning where I have to eat oatmeal for the rest of my frickin' life.
But you can put gin in it.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, Knob Creek. I find Knob Creek really goes well with oatmeal. Well, Olivier, I'm a genius. Just ask me, Francois. Sergio Marchionne's marketing guru has come up with yet another star-licking spot. This time he's using Charlie Sheen to advertise the Abarth, and the premise is that Charlie is under house arrest. And of course, Charlie's house is this 58,000 square foot mansion filled with beautiful people, and Charlie's racing around his house in his Abarth, and then he gets out and you see the ankle bracelet. And he has some interplay with the girl from the previous bar spot.
Yeah, to me, she's Miss Scorpione.
Yeah. I know Sergio loves Olivier, and I know Olivier loves celebrities, but really? J-Lo? And now this? I mean, Charlie Sheen is so over. It's not even... It's just bad. It's advertising at its worst.
To me, one of the sad parts of it is that the first commercial...
Yeah,
with Miss Scorpione, it was fabulous. It really was a great commercial because it had style. When the first time you saw it, there was a lot of unexpected about it. You didn't understand where it was going to go. And they picked someone who was sort of my idea of what the embodiment of the style of Abarth and Fiat could be in this country with a woman. I mean, she's...
Yeah, it could be.
And now that's been thrown into the dumpster of television advertising for Charlie Sheen. She's in the commercial, but the truth is, she's the person that shined in the last one.
Yeah. All right. Well, enough about that. Okay. It's not worth getting our our Under Armour in a bunch.
I still want a 500 Abarth SS.
Okay, Jim.
More power.
Okay. Well, if I put a ZL1 motor in the back seat, does that qualify?
That would work.
Has anyone driven a ZL1 yet?
No.
Mark Royce said he was going to let me drive it, but I guess that's not going to happen anymore.
It'll happen.
Oh, well. What about Consumer Reports? I had a reader all incensed with me. Dave in Houston. Thanks, man. No, I like Dave. He's cool. He was just saying, oh, you're dead wrong about Consumer Reports. This is the Bible for 98% of people buying cars or something like that. Hey, I got nothing against Consumer Reports. If they can do their scam and make money, I'm happy.
The thing is, Consumer Reports has a lot of credibility with a lot of people that don't care about cars.
Absolutely. You know, that's my point.
Right.
I mean, I put it in on the table on the site. It's just,
yeah,
we happen to not really care what they say about cars. But I get it.
Yeah.
Like 90% of the people out there say, oh, I'm going to buy a car. I'm going to go. I have to read Consumer Reports because I don't have a clue.
But the irony,
I get that.
The irony of it is they are incredibly predictable about what you got to get right so you don't get dinged. They're very predictable. So to me, it should be relatively easy to execute a car that we want to drive that takes care of those things for those guys.
Yeah, what do you think?
And it doesn't seem to work that way.
You guys are dead on. It's the place that a person that doesn't know anything about cars goes to look to find out about cars. Unfortunately, that's what 90% of the people. I also think that there's a lot of self-affirming the car purchase that I bought.
Yeah.
And it's a very circular.
That happens to the people who are submitting some of the things. And for other people, they resent the decision they made. And that shows up in there. One of the problems they have is that it's not they have no way of vetting the owners.
Right.
In their survey. They don't. Because you subscribe to Consumer Reports, oh, send us in whatever you have. Send us in your stuff.
And I would argue that a Lexus owner would never admit the car that they bought was the wrong car that they had, and so they wouldn't buy a car that was bad. So they kind of overlook all of the things that they don't like, whereas a BMW driver for years, you know, BMW would always get dinged for all these different things that had nothing to do with the car. It was the iDrive that was killing them. Or that was J.D. Power's.
J.D. Power. Yeah, that's where that one showed up.
But, I think that it's just one where, you know, all the people that like to buy foreign cars all get Consumer Reports, and all the Consumer Reports comes back and says that it's, look at how well the foreign cars are doing.
And you mean like Land Rover and Jag?
Yeah, they always get killed.
Well, they're foreign cars, aren't they?
Asian cars. I'll correct
it. Unfortunately, this business is one of inertia.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you manage to carve out a little space for yourself like Power did, Dave Power did, and now Consumer Reports, I mean, there's nothing stopping them.
No, they're a fixture of the future. We have to understand that. But that's what's interesting to me, because there's almost a matrix when you're engineering a car and you say, if we want to do well, we got to cover these issues.
I think that was one of the smart things Alan Mulally did. One of the first things he did when he came in is, let's figure out how we can get all of our cars up on this list.
Right.
Because this is the starting point. If it doesn't have a recommended check mark, and a lot of the cars are good cars. I just think that one of the things that we see happening is the quality of all of the cars continues to get closer and closer. And so the difference between first place and last place is less and less.
But there's a variable the manufacturers don't do a good job of controlling. The dealer and how those issues are handled at a customer level.
I had an old high school friend of mine's dad was like the number three guy at Kmart. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the smartest guys I've ever met. And he would he knew my father was in the car business and all that stuff. But he would always ask me, the one thing, Peter, I never will understand, because Kmart, the receipts from the night before from every store in the country was in headquarters by 8 a.m.
And this is before things like you deal with, like modems.
Yeah. And he was saying, I will never understand why they can't control their retail quotient. And I said, his name was Herb, great guy. I said, Herb, it's a mystery. And I got to tell you, I don't know much about the business because I'm still like 15. But I figured it'll always be that way.
Part of it is they don't control it.
Exactly.
They're independent businessmen, and they have...
I told them, I said, they're, if you want a dealer, you raise your hand, they give you one.
Mm-hmm. But I also think that the Hondas and Toyotas of the world are now running into problems at the dealership level, because those dealers right now are like, well, I would say 2 or 3 years ago, even more so, whatever car they had, they knew they would sell. So it didn't matter if I sold it to this person or that person. Just that it's going to sell.
Well, if you looked at dealer satisfaction, you find that historically Toyota dealers are not held in very high regard. The advantage was you bought your Toyota and you never took it back there again until it was time to buy a new one. So you weren't bothered by how bad the dealer was, but the dealers were pretty awful.
Speaking of Range Rover, now that you're starting to see the Evoque out in the road, wow, is that a home run? They can't build them.
No.
But when,
and it's a narrow cast car.
Sure.
You know, but it is absolutely striking. It's another one of those cars that when you see it, it's like it's a concept car for the road.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is I would be willing to bet, I'm not privy to their inside buyer statistics, but I would bet 80% of the buyers of it are totally new to the store.
Wouldn't surprise me. I would.
They have never even contemplating.
So will Evoque outsell Fisker?
Easily.
Easily.
2-1? Anyone?
10, 15? Lot to one.
Even difficulty building the Evoque, they'll outsell. Yeah. So what do you think? What do you make of the latest sales figures?
Go.
Well, it's one where I was surprised at the volume for February, but maybe it was, you know, the extra day thrown in there as well. But, I mean, it's a good sign for coming out for 2012 that people are a little more confident that we could see sales go up. Personally, I would like to just see small growth each year. I don't want to see big, expansive growth.
Yeah, I don't put much in the you know, this town in particular ran off the rails worrying about 30 days.
Yep. Well, I used to run off the rails worrying about 10 days.
Yeah.
Until they did. I mean, my God, what a crazy thing that was.
And so I don't get too revved up about it.
See, there's another thing, too. You have to. This is one of the problems with using this month last year. What was the climate like? Did you have some selling days that we couldn't sell cars because of weather? You have to understand why last year was last year before you make sweeping statements. And that's why I love, oh, we're up, hooray. I don't think there's any more confidence in the economy. I don't think that's why people are buying cars. I think a lot of people are buying cars out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Got a median age of cars now over 10 years. Median. So there's some folks that just got to get cars. F-150 was up this month, and a lot of the other truck guys that stood back, like you said,
yeah,
they stood back, but it's like it's time to get a truck. Good deals.
Yeah.
You know?
There are a lot of deals. I mean, just from watching television, you're like, oh, my God, $169 a month, $169, you know.
Well, my favorite vehicle, I mean, if you really watch the local dealer ads, you can get a full-size Ford or Chevy pickup. That perfectly decent, just a regular rear-wheel drive pickup for so cheap, it's just like, it's almost free.
$289 a month lease now on Regal GS. That is a heck of a car for less than $300 a month.
Yeah.
It actually is. Now, that's manuals they're blowing out. But, you know, I think we would probably want the car with a manual.
I do know for a fact that's what's going on right now in every manufacturer doing business in this country. How are they approaching the $5 a gallon gas question? What do you think's going on, Scott? Do you think we'll see that?
I don't know. I think it's going to go up. I don't think it's going to hit five.
It'll hit five in California, probably.
They should be five right now in California, for all I care.
Yeah.
You people get sunshine and stars. You should pay for gasoline.
Yes.
But it's, you know, I mean, the last time, all it does is it numbs us to whatever the new high will be this time around. So, you know, as it, you know, when it goes over four, nobody's going to panic because they're like, we've already been there before.
Well, the variables are different now. In 2008, I mean, we were going off the cliff, and that was like the last straw for the average consumer. People keep telling me, well, it's different now. You know, the trajectory of the economy's, you know, month to month seems to be doing better, and it's not going to have the same effect. We'll see.
The difference now than any time in the recent past is that the domestics all have cars that address the issue of expensive gas, and they didn't have that.
Exactly.
Right, before.
Even in 2008, I mean,
they didn't have them. You're right. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you look, and every manufacturer has products that address the issue.
Yeah, very exceedingly well, too.
Exactly.
Now, do you think they have that message out that a consumer, where the last time they go, well, I have to go to a Toyota or Honda dealership because I need a fuel-efficient car, or they go, yeah, I can go and get to a Chevy dealership, or I can go.
Chevy's been touting both the regular Cruze, the Eco, Volt. They've been pushing it. But so is Hyundai. Hyundai talks about having four sedans that get over 40 miles per gallon. 40 miles per gallon.
So, Ford, you know.
Yeah. So they're pitching it. The problem is there's the mental inertia outside of here where people don't expect the domestics to do that. But the stuff that's happened in the last, well, since 2008 has sort of gotten even people on the West Coast to go, yeah, they aren't what they aren't building what they used to. So there's a chance.
But it's a slow. Turning that inertia around is slow.
Well, because it's perception. And, you know, the truth is, Peter, you know, you dealt with perception in advertising.
Yes.
It takes forever to set it, and it takes even longer to change it.
Well, not this week's column, which was about Fisker, but last week I talked about how the democratization of technology, where all this cool stuff is slowly but surely moving down into the price ranges. Mm-hmm. That's, heated rear seats used to be something you'd find
S-class only,
or a Bentley, mm-hmm. or a Rolls Phantom. Now it's an Elantra.
Yep.
And you name it. There's more cars coming.
Heated steering wheel in the Verano.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, you know, if you have all this technology and features, you know, coming down, brand perception becomes hypercritical.
Well, that becomes the differentiator then.
That's what you have, brand perception. And what's the lead? The ultimate initial product differentiator when you're talking brand perception is design. Because I don't care how many focus groups you can sit in, and you ask people the same thing. Oh, well, I want good fuel economy, and I want to be safe. And then you show them a picture of a ZL1 or a Mustang. I want that, you know, for $10,000, and it should get 50 miles per gallon, right? Yeah. But that's coming in this business. That's brand perception. So people like BMW, still good.
Well, I mean, a lot of times the answer is I just want to get laid.
That's
but,
true.
You know, I think that it's the one thing that the consumer also expects is that price never to go up. They expect to get a $12,000
everybody wants
subcompact with rear seats that are heated and
upholstered in snail darter leather. Yeah, with Erie Oden paint.
So brand perception. And by the way, that's an excellent reference, Scott. There was a great movie with Dudley Moore called Real People. When he hooked up with a bunch of crazies, he was an ad man. His career was going down the tubes. He hooked up with a bunch of crazy people, and they started making ads, and it became a sensation. And the best ad they did was for Jaguar.
I forgot that one.
Oh, yeah. Buy a Jaguar and get a hand job. It was right in the dealer, in the showroom banners. Most successful auto campaign of all time. Thank you very much. Now, let's shifting gears. We just had the Oscars, which was lovely.
Yes.
Mila Jovovich. Ay, ay, ay. But anyway, let's forget about the economy, the fuel economy, brand perception, blah, 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 all that stuff in this car business that puts us to sleep. Let's talk about the new Ferrari F12 Berlinetta. Pure sexual fantasy on wheels with some serious horsepower.
Grigio Medio for me with probably a saddle interior.
Jim, please tell us how much horsepower, how big the V12 is. It's the successor to the 599.
Yep. Well, the funny thing is the 599 was better than a lot of people realized it was.
Exactly.
And I remember the first photograph I saw of it was an elevated side view. The car was driving and it made me think of a Corvette. And I'm like, wait a minute. When you see a Corvette, you're supposed to think of a Ferrari. You're not supposed to look at a Ferrari and think of a Corvette. They have redeemed themselves with this one.
Oh, boy, have they ever.
But, you know, they're in something of a renaissance now. We'll sort of take the FF out of the equation.
Yeah.
The 458 is a spectacular piece of design. It's an amazing car.
As Kenny Powers would say, awesome.
I mean, it's one of those Ferraris. It's a car that, for a lot of people I know, I'm one of them, I couldn't love new Ferraris. They had lost some of the magic of the cars when I was growing up that made me just go, oh my gosh. The 458 had it all back in spades. It was all there, inside, outside, specs.
Sound.
Exactly. Thing. And the 612 has, or the F12 Freudian slip. The F12 does it now, but as a proper big Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know?
Swoopy styling, and I like to use styling.
Well, the truth is, General Motors used to think they had a big S in the floor mat or the mat when you walked into the design building. And it meant styling because it's General Motors styling. And somebody thought, oh, we're not stylists, we're designers. So they threw that away.
Well, it was styling in Harley Earl and Bill Mitchell's era.
Right. And the thing is, there's a difference between design and style. Anybody can design something. OK, this cup was designed.
Right.
And anybody can design it. But show me a cup with style. Right. That's what I want. The Italians, everything the Italians do with automobiles, even if it's awful, is done with style.
Well, look at what the Italians were doing in the 50s. Oh. Was like they were like a different planet altogether. And fortunately, Bill Mitchell was smart enough to say, let's get one of those cars over here and put them on our patio so our designers can get inspired.
But that's when GM was at its greatest from a design standpoint. Oh. There is something to be said for styling over design.
Right through the early 70s.
And well, yeah. But the thing is, the F12 is style.
Oh,
and it has presence. It's one of those cars. I cannot wait to see it in the tin.
What's the horsepower number? 700 something?
Yes, it's low sevens, but it's... it doesn't win. If you want horsepower, I still say that my favorite car on earth is still just a boring 614 Veyron. Not a super sport, not a grand sport, okay? I have very simple tastes.
But when is the vehicle overstyled? Because I've heard people complain about even like the Elantra or the Sonata that they're overstyled.
Okay, I can explain it. The philosophy of overstyling is the designer didn't know when to lift the pan.
Right.
All right, and it happens on cars. I'll tell you another vehicle that's overstyled is the current Lexus RX. If you look at the car, it has this form for the fenders.
I think that vehicle is so out of touch.
But my point is, they just kept doing stuff on the car. They just kept doing it and kept doing it. And there's an aspect of that, in my mind, on basically not the Elantra so much as the Sonata. Because the Sonata is, the sin of the Sonata is the front end, the grill. And nobody had ever done that before. And sometimes there are reasons people didn't do that stuff before.
Yeah. Sometimes there's white space because there are no people there.
But the side thing, which people say is overstyled, I don't think is. I think the car has a direction. It's dynamic. But the front, they just sort of like, guys, stop.
I think the Elantra is much more cohesive.
Oh, the Elantra is a very, very, very professional piece of design, down to having these forms that are set up by the fenders where they go to little peaks, and that shape is duplicated in the headlights, the taillights, and the instruments. Yeah,
no. And there's a piece of even the Azera as well, I think, has it. The new 12, there's a piece of chrome that goes from out of the headlight all the way along the body.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, they've done this pretty well. I mean, it's...
Yeah, you can do overstyling. The problem is when you start talking about styling and overstyling, you're in the most subjective of all measures for cars.
Right.
I'm just wondering, Hyundai, is on this upward trajectory, but wow, I don't know. The Azera, they have to create a reason for being for the Azera.
To me,
in the market.
Especially seeing the
I'm not
pricing.
Not saying it's a bad car. I just wonder how many Hyundais are there.
I think it's a really nice car, and I think it's really for the person that wants to buy a Hyundai but wants to give them $6,000 more.
I think there's something else, too. The same mechanism for that vehicle goes on at Lexus between the ES and the IS.
And
the point is there's some people who don't want rear-wheel drive. That's fine. Give them a front-drive car. Because when you look at the Azera and you look at the pricing on it, it's nibbling around where the Genesis sedan is. Mm-hmm. Or was it launch, okay? So I understand that one is appealing to a different buyer. If you look at the Lexus ES, it has an ancient demographic. It's older buyers. They want front-wheel drive. I feel safe in front-wheel drive. Fine. The Azera is for those people.
Well, Lexus is the old GM demographic. It's the old...
It's Buick. It's the old traditional Buick buyer, yeah. Absolutely. But that's why I can see why the Azera is there. But the point is, does it become like the Toyota Avalon, eventually an exit-level car?
So let's bang around here. What about Buick, Scott? I mean, here's Buick. Do I like the car we just talked about, the Regal GS? Yes. Do I like, in my mind, what I think Buick should be, which is design, crisp design, and just stately over the road sophistication
cruisers.
Yeah. What I see going on is a kind of a dichotomy in brewing in Buick now. It's like all the holdovers that used to work at Pontiac are secretly hijacking Buick and saying, "Hey, yeah, but we'll do the Regal GS Turbo, and it's an awesome car. It is an awesome machine. But is it a Buick? I don't know. Now, old school Buick, yeah. Now, they're going to the entirely new audience. Oh, no, this is a new Buick. Forget about the Enclave. And forget about the LaCrosse. This is your Buick. See, I don't think so. I think Buick should be the LaCrosse stretched out to a absolutely stunning Riviera coupe. I think they need to do that. And now they have a juxtaposition where, well, if you used to like Pontiacs, whatever they used to be to you, check out this Regal GS Turbo. I just wonder, do you think that's...
I love the Regal GS Turbo, first of all.
I do, too. I loved it.
I think that the Verano does more to redefine that brand than the GS Turbo.
GS Turbo is a small cut of a pie to appeal to a very specific buyer. I can accept it in there as a performance Buick that's a low-volume car.
And I don't think we're going to see the GS Verano. And I think that, and I just got out of a Verano, and it's a really nice car, and it's one where you get in it and you're like, okay, this is well done.
I'm scheduled to drive it.
The ride is pretty quiet. It's not overpowered, certainly. I mean, but
they got a 2-liter turbo coming, but it's not a GS. It's like 240 horse, which will be very nice in it.
And I've always liked the LaCrosse.
I think the LaCrosse design has held up very well.
If you get big wheels on it, that's one of those cars that is cursed by the standard wheel tire package. You're like, are those 13s? And they're not. They're like 16-inch wheels, but they look like them.
Yeah, now the LaCrosse properly equipped looks good.
It has presence.
Yes.
And the Enclave is one where I've been surprised that it's done so well this long. It's, what, 6 years?
No.
5 years?
5 years. And they've got a relatively big change coming out.
No, it's a big change.
And the interior is very nice. The new interior is very nice. The interesting thing about that car is that its best year of sales was last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a segment where normally cars launch and they sort of go into their slow decline. Then the companion vehicle for it, the glamorous potato that isn't glamorous. I mean, I'm sorry. The Encore is just something.
No, the Encore is a turd waiting to be buried.
A friend of mine saw it and he had he said it looks like it should be sold in Asia. It looks as though it's a Buick for China.
It's like a lunar rover. Or something. It just has this odd shape, odd width.
Well, and it's a problem. They're trying to take cues from vehicles that are much larger, and they're trying to tailor them for this little tiny package. And there's a point at which you say, stop, we'll do new cues to do this vehicle. They didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take
interior on it's really nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, GM's got their interior mojo going.
Yeah.
And my favorite still, I think, was going to be a big hit, and it's so not politically correct with the German enthusiast wannabes and whatever, is the XTS.
Absolutely. XTS Platinum interior is spectacular.
Spectacular car, and I think GM is going to be very pleased with the sales performance. Ben, let's take a break and hear from our friends at Chevrolet.
It was more than a car to him. It really was his baby.
Oh, no. That's my old Chevy. Dear God.
Okay, it's time for those magic words. Ben, let's rip it rapid fire.
Oh my gosh.
Gotta be the host here.
Wrong end.
Yeah. It's not my iPad, I must say. I do rapid fire a little different. If I don't like, I just, whatever. Okay. I just caught AH from Thursday. When I first explored the Prius 5, I missed it too to get full AH dispatch controls, blah, 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 blah. I hope this helps. No, it doesn't help. I don't care. George from Brooklyn. Are Volkswagen cars from Mexico less reliable than the ones from Deutschland?
It's tough to say. If you get comparable powertrains, they look to be about the same. It's just that they source some of their cars with certain engines just from Mexico, so it kind of blinds it. Because remember, they still have they're using their 2.5 liter in a lot of places where they probably shouldn't. With comparable engines, they're very close.
Here's one, Scott. Mitch W. wants to know, can Mazda get anywhere licensing Skyactiv?
I don't know. I wasn't that impressed with Skyactiv in the Mazda 3. It didn't do much. I mean, the CX-5 or the one that that's supposed to be the full Skyactiv package. And so
I think it's marketing, you know, come on.
Well, there's more full implementations in the CX-5, and it's going to be how does it drive? And I haven't driven it yet, so I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, a lot of it sounds like a lot of the stuff that Hyundai was doing with making the cars lighter. And let's not put a six-cylinder engine in it. And let's not do this. Buick doesn't, there's a bunch of cars now. Buick doesn't have a V8 in its lineup anymore.
Well, let me give you a recent example of marketing for technology that really works. EcoBoost. Every car that you can buy almost has direct fuel injection, turbocharge. Ford stumbled upon a brand name for it.
And used it.
And used it, and it works.
Yep.
SkyActiv? Don't think so. Just my opinion. Now, Catalin Alexei from Romania. Catalin, how are you? They should give the Nobel Peace Prize to PSA. PSA doesn't have rivals. They only have partners. The only problem with this GM deal is this. What will Ford and BMW say when GM will have access to their diesel and gas engines developed in partnership with PSA? What will Mazda do? Will they join the PSA UN, be a part of the I'm the best Sergio empire, or learn Chinese? Thank you. That's a question of the week. Good night, everybody.
Mazda's going to have to partner with somebody.
Ben, my device is not refreshing, and I don't have any new questions.
Mazda is going to have to partner with somebody. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, Mazda, yeah.
You know, and the question is, logically, if you look at it from a global standpoint, one of the logical partners is Toyota, and that's going to be one of the toughest ones to be for them to ever put together.
Not Ford.
No. Ford was in there and left. Remember, they said, that's it. We're done.
Sure, let's go to a call.
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Ben Sanders. Without this show, it would not happen.
There would be no show without Ben.
There would be no show without Ben.
Yeah, this is Rick from San Diego. On the February sales, looks like Ford's finally getting their stuff together with the Focus and Fusion. Amazing what a good transmission and the Focus does, over 100% increase, and looks like it's right at the top of, near the top of the level of the, in the segment sales. But on GM side, Buick is just killing Cadillac, and with the extra prices, I don't really get the Regal. It's just way overpriced for what you're getting. I mean, even the A4 outsold it this past month because, you know, why pay A4 prices for a Regal when you can just buy the A4. Comments?
No. Okay, Ben, let's go to another call.
Well, he said to me about you know, Buick outselling Cadillac. If you look at, you know, God's immutable price volume curve, Buicks are cheaper than Cadillacs. You sell more of them. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
So,
Ben, let's do the other call from Troy about the Jeep Compass.
Hi, Peter and Jim and Scott. Great show tonight. Just wondering, do you guys happen to know for the year 2012, this year right now, does the Jeep Compass actually come with a turbo? I'm not sure. I've been looking into it. And Scott had written a really great article about the Jeep Compass about a month or so ago. And he said there was a turbo in it, and I keep trying to track it down, and there doesn't seem to be anything. But once again, great show.
No turbo in it.
Keep up the work. Take care. Bye-bye.
Scott has ruled on that. There is no turbo.
Yeah, Compass is normally aspirated. Now, if they do a diesel on it, which they probably will for some export markets.
As a diesel.
Yeah, it would be a turbo diesel, but no turbo gas engine in there.
Okay, Jonathan said, what was the SAR? Jonathan, we don't care.
SAR is a number that sort of...
No, he knows what SAR is. He just wants to know what it is.
No, I was going to say that SAR is a number that brain-dead analysts tend to use when they need to sort of fill something up and talk about SAR. It means
15.1 million.
Great.
Scotty in Cleveland, how are you, buddy? Good to hear from you. According to Wikipedia, Daydream Believer is a song composed by John Stewart shortly before he left the Kingston Trio. The song was originally recorded by the Monkees with Davy Jones singing lead vocals. Ding, ding, ding. Thanks, Scott. Comment from Jerry. I'm a Believer was written by Neil Diamond. I'm a Believer. It's not Daydream Believer.
Right.
Look it up, kids. Great songs. Crayon breaking. Jim, do you think the Kia Optima is overstyled?
No, just the opposite. I think the styling on the Optima is about right, and there's a little bit too much going on the Sonata. I think actually the Optima is going to turn out to have more legs in the market from a design standpoint. It'll be considered modern longer than the Sonata.
Yeah. DC Autogeek wants to know what our thoughts are on the new Kia K9 sedan.
Well, if we get it, it'll be pretty interesting.
Yeah, it'll be pretty interesting. Let's move on. Comment from Mike D. White. What do you think of Volvo not selling a new V40 here? Who cares?
Well, the old V40, yeah. You know, bearing in mind that it was sort of this weird Mitsu sort of Volvo Ford hybrid, they're probably better off without it in this market. They have a real problem figuring out what's going to be their unique selling proposition at Volvo because everybody's safe.
Question for Mr. Hall from Baja Busta. Oh, formerly known as Baja Busta. Why don't you wear the apron tonight? You were seen wearing the current issue of Motor Trend.
Well, that's because it's not the pre-Detroit. Oh, gosh, I didn't know that photo ran. I should have that apron. It was a better apron.
Jay Cujo wants to know, for Jim Hall, are Consumer Reports actually reporting accurately? Whereas it seems GM, Ford, and Chrysler all ran over their dogs 25 years ago, and they just can't recommend or give them their due to save their lives.
It's a combination of the two.
Yeah, we talked about it. Jim, with GM and PSA partners now, does this mean that John can go to any GM dealer and get parts for his
DS?
Two chevaux. No.
No, if only. You can't even get parts for those in France anymore.
If they bring back the Citroen SM, will they change the name to SC and power with the ZL1 instead of the underpowered PRV V6? Yeah, right. Oh, Catalan is back.
Cool.
Romania, the land with cars.
But Dacia.
But no roads. Good evening. Salutations, Mr. Alex Trinas. What does the panel think of the new Ferrari 620 GT? Is that the F12?
Yeah, it might be the F12.
Yeah, we already talked about it.
The car is spectacular. Like all new Ferraris. Well, not all new Ferraris. The
they want
FF.
To know if we, do you know the Dacia brand?
Yes.
The brand was the worst design in the world.
No, the Dacia Duster. That's
what
a great
the
car.
Worst thing that can come out from the GM PSA deal? More complexity. Ron asks, when the Chinese finally nationalize or close their market for foreign automakers, will GM, Volkswagen, and other global brands begin to cannibalize each other's market share? Besides India, what other growth regions remain? The Bahamas.
Yeah. India is the next one because the one-child policy in China works against the country because their population will actually decline and get older between now and 2060. India's will have a larger middle class with younger owners. And that's the Indian market is one, you know.
Yeah.
Plus you have the luxury of English common law as the basis of their legal system.
Yeah. John wants to know, he saw the Scion Toyota IQ ad and says the first thing they brag about is the car's turning radius. Ironically, if you type turning radius into Yahoo, the first thing on the page is Scion IQ listing. Boy, are they getting smart.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to figure out the last. About,
he says, thank God there's finally a car for people who love to do a U-turn.
But you know, I remember when the Triumph Herald used to have the tightest turning circle. But the question is, who buys a car because of the turning circle?
Yes, John, pull up. Why are you asking us this? Driving us crazy.
It's for people who like to park. I mean, the smart car was the same way. If you like to park, the smart car is a great car to have.
Because you didn't want to drive it.
Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, the funny thing about the IQ is if the IQ got 70 miles per gallon, we'd all be going,
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But it doesn't.
Steven wants to know, shouldn't Mazda and Chrysler Fiat merge so Alfa and Mazda could join, where Alfa does the styling and Mazda does the rest? Oh, boy. I don't know.
Mazda, you know, they kept hanging on. I love rotary engines. I really do. But it's an engine with no future. It just doesn't have it. And they've just poured good money after bad over years for that. And so I'm trying to figure out what Mazda has that's that scintillating. Because I'd rather drive an Alfa than drive a Mazda right now.
At least you want to drive what you perceive Alfa to drive like.
No, I've driven 159s. They're very, very nice cars.
Okay.
I mean, it's about the size of a Lambda.
Mitch wants to know, would Jim Hall please give us the inside dirty dirt on why GM is getting connected to Peugeot? We already talked about that. Will Scott have a particular focus in his new AOL/Autoblog work, Scott?
No. I am going to continue to do some reviews, but it'll strictly be a product focus beat, but it does open up to do a lot more issue-oriented things.
Yeah. And he also says, did the U.S. government have anything to do with Lasorda taking over at Fisker? No. There's no conspiracy theories. Fisker just had to get a guy who knew what the hell he was doing.
He needed somebody that understood manufacturing because Fisker's only hope now is to actually build a car. And it's going to take cubic money to do it, and I think they're undercapitalized. You know, the problem with most startup car companies is they're always undercapitalized.
Yeah. What do you need? $100 billion?
Well, to start a new car company, you probably have to have in cash to spend over about the first 3 to 4 years to get it going. You probably need somewhere around $10 to $15 billion.
Okay. Mitch wants to know, is Juan Pablo Montoya lucky to still be with us? Absolutely. If that car had not careened off, it would have been touch and go if Juan could have gotten out of that car. That
yeah, because it would have been steeped in JP4.
That was nasty. Should NASCAR races be run in primetime weekday TV? No, that was an aberration, but they should run the Daytona 500 at night.
And in the rain.
By the way, if you hadn't seen the news, Roger Penske at the end of this season is switching to Ford, which is a very big deal, and it leaves Dodge in the lurch. And if you want to know what I really think about it, I'll probably write about it next week or look for my quotes in Nate Ryan's piece in USA Today tomorrow. Let me see. What else do we have here? I'm going to thank Office Furniture Solutions again right now. Nate Anderson's the man. We thank them for the set. Give Nate a call, 248-668-0077. Nate really answers the phone. What a concept. Okay. Well, here's one for Jim, because you are a mini maestro. Kit asked, the Mini website and Wikipedia say the engines and Minis are made in BMW plant in the UK, but the window sticker in my car says the engines was made in France. Where was the engine made, Jim?
The engines for Minis are built by PSA. They're engines that are used in the Citroën DS3, and they do a hot DS3 that gets a JCW engine. So you actually have a Peugeot engine in there, and I have one in my Mini as well.
There you have it. Once again.
Don't trust Wikipedia, for gosh sake.
Yeah, they don't call him the man who knew too much for nothing. Okay, Andrew says, new Hyundais like the Sonata and Azera look nice, but they went a bit crazy with the chrome. The Fusion looks stylish without the crazy chrome. Most new Buicks rely too much on Opel styling. Okay.
It's funny, because the plan is to totally converge Opel and Buick design, to the point where things like the check mark in the LaCrosse is going to get toned down a tiny bit on the next one, but it means Opels will start carrying some of that DNA. And it makes sense, because there's no market where they sell both brands.
It's not rebadging.
No, it's just parallel design, which is happening actually at Chrysler, because Lancia and Chrysler design DNA are going to be converged, so they're going to be the same thing. I mean, that's why I would really like a Chrysler 300 SRT8, but I want to put Lancia Tema badges on it and a Lancia grill and call it a Tema 816. Because they used to make an 832 because it had 32 valves, but this one, you know, it's a push rod, so it'd be an 816.
Well, this is an appropriate question at this time of the evening. George from Brooklyn wants to know, what will you do if Jim Hall leaks coolant?
I'm leaking Gino. Great line from the movie The Racers, where Gilbert Roland is in a bad crash, and he looks at Kirk Douglas and goes, Gino, I'm leaking. Oh, yeah.
That was great.
It's a fine film.
My favorite was in Grand Prix with Jim Carner and Yves Montand after the Monaco debacle. Yves Montand smoking a cigarette, still in his light blue Dunlop driving room, with the sweater tied around his neck.
Looking very continental.
Beat. Do you ever get tired of the driving? And Jim Garner's like, no.
Yeah, you're right.
Sometimes I get very tired. Ben, do we have any more phone calls?
We do not.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. That's a lack of interest. I will ban the chat room from participation for 2 weeks. No, I'm just kidding. Thanks in the chat room, by the way. I know you guys like to talk about yourselves and occasionally pay attention, but when you do, it's quality attention. We love that. So, you know, we're getting to the close here. Not quite. Okay, Jim and Scott, two best mainstream car designs on the road today. Mainstream, I'm not talking exotic, because...
Sonata. Raptor.
Awesome. I love the Raptor.
The Raptor is so in your face. You can't not like it. Even if you're not a big truck guy, you look at the Raptor and it makes you grin.
Well, I don't know. Well, kind of particular to males, but I don't know anyone who sees it and says, oh, man, I don't want it. Everyone sees it.
The CEO of AOL, he was in the Detroit office today. Mm-hmm. He just bought a Raptor.
Awesome. Jim, how about you? Two best current mainstream.
Cadillac CTS Coupe.
Oh.
Okay, that's a tough one to not absolutely love.
I will second that emotion.
And See, that mainstream is the part that gets me. I'll throw in Audi A5/S5. That's a tough one to. It also shows my preference toward coupes, so you know I'm not proud. Yeah. I'll tell you a car I think that is going to look better as time goes on. I always liked it. It's the current Malibu. The current Malibu looks substantial. It looks bigger than it is. It looks more expensive than it is. And a lot of that character is gone on the new Malibu.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of see why they did the new Malibu, but I think the current Malibu is quite good.
Yeah.
I remember Bob Lutz said it's everything we know so far. I said, no, it isn't. That's Porsche's line. But I'll give it to you. I like the CTS Coupe. I think it's fantastic. I think for a mainstream car that you can walk up and pay money for, it's pretty cool.
That is going to be one diabolically clever used car to buy.
Yes.
Because it's going to look good. That car will look good 15 years from now. And it'll be almost as striking as it is.
No car has as good a back end as that car. I've seen it in a parking lot, I think, one time here, and it was pit.
As you walk up to it from the rear 7/8, yeah.
And you're looking at it, and it's sitting right next to, like, it was, I think, an XF, a Jaguar XF. And you're just like, there's no comparison. That coupe looks awesome.
And, I've got so many. And since I threw out the question, I can say whatever I want. So I think the LaCrosse is a great mainstream design. It really is. I think the police interceptor version of the Dodge Charger is awesome.
Have you seen the one they've got with the white paint section? It's, if a police department actually had that, it would be so cool. Yeah. But, yeah.
I got a bunch more. I think the Fiesta is a terrific design statement for that segment.
Fiesta, I think, works far better than the Focus.
Yes, it does.
Far better.
I will agree with you. Actually, I like the Focus with the truck better than the hatchback.
The hatch has some really strange stuff going on with the window and the lamp cluster that is, I don't know.
Well, yeah,
again, they didn't know
the
way to lift.
Lights are like this.
Well, yeah, I think of it as looking like a personal massage device that some people might like, okay? The bottom line is that...
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We have made a transition in the show this evening.
An unprecedented one.
Yes.
But that's a classic example of a car where they didn't know when to lift the pen, the hatchback version of the Focus.
Exactly.
They just kept going, and it's like, just stop.
Well, look at the time. Gee, it's flown by. We are about to douse the campfire for another week. I'd like to thank my guest today, Scott Burgess. Always great to have you. Now of AOL Autos.
How do you spell it?
And what else? AOL.
Autoblog. Also be working with Autoblog.
By the way, I think I'm going to be on Autoblog's webcast sometime soon. I don't know. I forgot.
I won't be there.
I forget. And, of course, Jim Hall of 2953 Analytics. Always a pleasure, Jim.
Thank you, Peter.
Always the man who knew too much, and we like that. Check out Jim's new video series with his brother, Bob, called Hall vs. Hall.
Hall versus Hall.
Hall versus Hall. That will be on roundaboutshow.com starting this Monday, which is cool. Now, you can get all of my stuff at autoextremist.com. Don't forget, there's more than just my column in there. You can follow Auto Extremists on Twitter. I was actually tweeting some of late. Twitter.com/AutoExtremist. Become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/AutoExtremist. Shout out to AJ Morning in Washington, who maintains that for me because I can't possibly. You can friend Autoline at Facebook.com, Autoline Detroit, /AutolineDetroit, or you can follow Autoline on Twitter at Twitter.com/Autoline. And they can follow you on AOL.
Twitter at Autocritic, and AOL, what is it, AOLAutos.com?
Yes. And Jim, you don't tweet, right?
I do, but I do it sort of in a stealthy fashion.
They're secluded.
No.
It's not. You really do.
Oh, there's a picture of someone that might be me.
Oh, okay. And thanks to everyone who tuned in. We'll see you next week.
Hooray!
Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good evening, a good morning, or a good afternoon whenever you partake of this. It's been a real pleasure. Take care.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, Get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutoLine.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion, and by Chevrolet. Chevy runs deep.